update and notify every time?
Yes, just.
I get so many emails about that.
Nobody do that. Just click update. Okay. Welcome to the agent call. It's April 3rd. Trying new things today, so we'll explain it as we go, but please try to log in to there's a unique link that I'm going to drop in the chat. I'll explain this a little bit in a second, but this will get you to the page. That may not get you to the page. We'll see. Anyway, go ahead and try to get started on that. And you can use the same, if you're already on a Hyperledger Rocket Chat, you can use the same login to log into the Hyperledger Confluence Wiki, which is convenient. Okay, antitrust policy here. Linux Foundation meetings involve participation by industry competitors, and it is the intention of the Linux Foundation to conduct all of its activities in accordance with applicable antitrust and competition laws. It's therefore extremely important that attendees adhere to meeting agendas and be aware of and not participate in any activities that are prohibited under applicable U.S. state, federal, or foreign antitrust and competition laws. Examples of types of actions that are prohibited at Linux Foundation meetings and in connection with Linux Foundation activities are described in the Linux Foundation antitrust policy available at linuxfoundation.org/antitrust-policy. If you have questions about these matters, please contact your company counsel, or if you're the member of the Linux Foundation, feel free to contact Andrew Updegrove of the firm Gessmer Updegrove LLP, which provides legal counsel to the Linux Foundation. Okay, so a couple points of order on this. I don't believe if you just accumulate edits, they'll all get there when someone actually hits update. So you don't have to publish when you're done in order to make that happen. So get it in here, and then you can go ahead and we can just continually update this. We don't have to save it continually. It will sort of keep track of them, and then we can publish at the end.
I suspect someone should publish at the end, though.
We will.
Okay, good.
Yeah. But when you're doing the simultaneous edit thing, it doesn't matter as much. We'll definitely get it published. I'm pretending to run this meeting, so I will. I'll take the responsibility and make sure we publish before I navigate away from the page. Okay. So today is 3rd of April. It's the agent call. We're on a wiki now. So there's now a page here that you can bookmark. This is the working group page with the call link and the stuff. This section will automatically update with new call notes. So, and I've sorted inverse. So the top one should almost always be today's call, or at least the next call that's coming up. And then I have a link here to the historical notes. I can decide if I'm energetic enough to move these all into the wiki, but I'm not in the meantime. So I'm going to just link it to the previous things, previous locations for that. And I believe you can actually upload right to the wiki the actual calls. Other working groups are doing that. So rather than the Google Docs folder, I'm going to attempt with this call to add the updated stuff right to the wiki instead of relying on Google Docs. And that way there's less of a dependency there. The old page is here. If you happen to go here, I have a link to the new location. I hope that was obvious. That doc's going to stick around either forever or until we migrate all the stuff into the wiki. And so we'll have that content available. So we have, as far as announcements, today we have, IW coming up April 30th to May 2nd. That is present, that's a really awesome conference if you've never been to before. Lots of us will be there talking about all things agent-y and identity and all the stuff. Other announcements. We have a book being released soonish by Kalia and Heather Vesant. It's a book about it's like the complete guide to self-sovereign identity. I forget the title of it exactly, but that is being released on Friday. You can pre-order it now. If you know anyone that's interested and would like to learn stuff, that's a good resource for them.
Do you know if that book is the one that they're working on and talking about at IW in the fall?
I believe they turned the report into the book.
Okay.
That's there. It's in Kindle format right now, and apparently it can only be downloaded to a Kindle app that displays rich things. It didn't let me like send it to my Kindle, so I have to sort that out. But that's a good resource. Okay.
Yeah, they probably
other announcements. Sorry, I just talked right on top of you. Other announcements for the meeting today. Thank you, Oscar, by the way, for providing a clean link in the chat. I didn't clean that up very well.
Wait, I have an announcement.
Steven, shoot.
So we had our Code With Us at BCGov, and Tomislav Markovsky won the Code With Us. And so he is starting work as soon as possible on the stuff we're going to be doing for IAW. So congrats to Tomislav.
Congrats to Tomislav, and thank you, BCGov, for funding open source development. That's fantastic.
The cool thing was that there was a second response that was extremely good as well from Spark New Zealand. And they didn't want to include a payment option involved in there, so and wanted to work with us on it as well. So we get a double bonus out of this one. And so we're also going to be working directly with Tobias and team. So we're looking forward to that as well. So we're excited.
Fantastic. That is good news.
Great news.
Other announcements? Okay, please speak up if you haven't found your mute button and you would like to share or share something. We have a couple items on the agenda today. The first thing that we thought we'd talk about is the peer message JIT spec. And Daniel Hardman's going to lead that discussion and guide us through that. And then Kyle will be talking about the signatures hype. And then time remaining, we wanted to talk about the introduction protocol as well. With that, in a couple minutes at the end, we'll talk about proposed topics. If you have proposed topics, go ahead and just add them right to like the next week section or something. And if you want to participate in adding notes, there's a notes column here in the table. I thought we'd give that a go, or we can just add the notes like we've done before. But if you would like to contribute notes while the discussion is ongoing, please do so. That's very helpful for all of us. It's nice and helps the call be indexed properly and people find stuff that they're looking for. So so please keep this open and contribute notes if you're willing. And if there's nothing else, I'm pausing dramatically.
I would like to make a request that somebody take notes when I'm doing the signature hype in terms of action items so that I can go figure out how I need to update that when I'm giving the presentation.
Perfect.
Any help that would be appreciated.
We will do so.
Thank you.
Okay. I think then the next, I'm going to stop sharing here and hand this over to you, Daniel, and you can guide us through the peer-did spec. Daniel?
Sorry, I'm talking to myself without taking the mute button off. I'm trying to find the which of the many screens I should be sharing. No, not the one that already has the wiki article in it. Let me go back. Let's see. How about this one? No, that's it. Keeps. Let's
see. Hey, do you want to just move your tab into that?
It's the type of problem I usually have.
Okay, do you see a tab that says peer did method spec on GitHub at the top?
Yes.
Okay, good. I found the right tab. Okay. So what I wanted to do for about 5 to 10 minutes is just make people aware of some stuff that exists and invite collaboration on it. The stuff is in two places. There is an actual repo where a did method spec for peer dids is being written. And this spec uses the W3C respec spec writing conventions, which means that you write an index.html that follows certain conventions, and then the W3C's respec tool runs through it and produces something fancy. So if you look at index.html raw, you just see a classic HTML document. But if you look at it in the fancy form, this is what it looks like. And a lot of this, you know, verbiage and icons of W3C and this header about what versions there are, whatever's been generated by JavaScript that's embedded in the HTML that we don't have to do much about. But this is the peer did method spec, and it is actually officially listed as a canonical, let's see, if I go to the W3C did method registry and pull up their registry right here and look at all the known did methods, look at this. There is a peer did method that is officially listed in the W3C's catalog. And if you click that, it takes you to a location. And the location of this peer did method spec in GitHub is under a GitHub account called OpenSSI. And there's only one repo under OpenSSI, and that's the peer did method spec. So if anybody would like to help contribute to this, fork that repo and raise pull requests against it. You can see that there are four issues that have been raised. Stephen Curran has been out doing some commenting. There's a guy named Mike Varley, and Christopher Allen has raised some thoughts as well. So there is some collaboration going on here. Right now, I've written the bulk of this. I would love to have some other contributors because right now, even though other people are collaborating on issues and stuff, I'm the only person that's an actual contributor to the index.html file. So more contributors desirable. With that, what is this actually?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Is that OpenSSI GitHub organization a formal thing, or is it just a network independent place where we can collaborate? Why not in the W3C or some other location?
The W3C imposes very strong requirements on process, and very few of the did methods that are shown here in this catalog are actually being managed by the W3C. The W3C wants to manage what a did method spec template should be, but they don't want to manage the writing of every did method. So we're not trying to do it in the W3C. Now, we could do it in Indy, but there are some political challenges because people outside of our community perceive Indy as being very strongly associated with a particular blockchain, and this method has nothing to do with our blockchain. So putting it in Indy doesn't quite make sense. It might make sense if we create a new project under Hyperledger that's not called Indy, where we put all of our agent work. We could possibly host it there. So in the meantime, OpenSSI is just a GitHub account that's an informal place to collect things that's not owned by any given party. It's not owned by, the sovereign community, the indie community, the diff community, any of those. It's just kind of anybody who's interested in this topic show up and work on it. And I think it will move in a month or two when we have a better idea what its long-term home is.
Thanks. That's a useful conversation.
Follow-up question to that is, so I know you and I had talked about this in the past, like registering non-standard, I guess, protocols is what we're calling them now. Under this OpenSSI, do you want to keep them in hypes now so that they're all collected? And then how do you want to handle that? Or would you prefer that they go in OpenSSI? I was addressing this question to Daniel, but I'd actually like to open this question up to the entire community.
I'm not really advocating that we suddenly cut over and start using the OpenSSI location as a place right now. I think between now and IIW, there's some work that's going on around organizing an OpenSSI
initiative or moonshot or something inside of, or possibly outside of Hyperledger, where we get Diff to, you know, buy into the location as well and stuff like that. And so I think until that's resolved, it's a little bit muddy where the ideal location is. So I'm only sticking this particular spec there and not trying to put other stuff there for the time being.
I second everything Daniel just said.
Okay. Yeah, that, as you explained that, that made sense.
Okay, so anyway, what does the spec actually say? Let's get into that for a minute. So it talks about the theory of pairwise dids and why you would not probably want to put a pairwise did on a ledger. And it says that unlike all the other did methods that we have that we know about, this is a did method where the root of trust is not a ledger. Instead, it's a protocol. And this is using the word protocol in the way the agent-to-agent community has been using it, meaning basically a stateful interaction that's accomplished through exchanging messages. And so it talks about how to create these things and what the messages look like. It talks about how the method applies when you're having relationships among groups of people. And it talks about an N-wise relationship versus the hub and spoke version of groups. And then it gives the actual name of the method. So it talks about why we're not doing did colon sov colon peer or did colon v1 colon nim or any of these other things. It's actually did colon peer, and then it gives an ABNF for it. And the format of the did is did colon peer colon and then a key format, because this method allows several different key formats, at least potentially, to be used. Right now, we've been focused only on the ED25519 key type, which is used inside Sovereign, but it assumes that we'll come along later and define another key format 2 or key format 3, that'll be the SEC P256 version and so forth. So it doesn't really care about the format of the key that much. It just requires that you specify which one it is. And it talks about how you must generate the NSI portion of the DID from the public key of a key pair so that you know at the moment of creation that the DID is under the control of the user. And then it gives an example of these messages, and it refers to the various hypes we've been writing. So Kyle's hype about wire format is referenced here. So is the hype about JSON LD compatibility. It says that this is the message family that all these messages live in. The create operation for this peer did method uses the connection protocol that we've already agreed upon as a community. So there's a lot of momentum around that one. And then it introduces some messages for the other operations you might want to do with peer dids. So if you want to ask what is the did document for a particular did, you would send a state request message, and this is what one looks like. And you would get a state response message back, and this is what one looks like. And there is more information about these messages in an indie hype, which brings me to this pull request. Pull request number 104 in the indie hype repo is for the connection management protocols stuff, which is a more detailed description than the peer did method spec of all of these messages and how they interact and so forth. And then the operation to update state is accomplished through a sync state message. It's not accomplished through a simple request response, because this is a case where either party might know something that the other party does not. So it's a little bit more complicated to send one of these messages, but basically you send, you pick a point in time and say, here's a, what I know about how the state has changed since this point in time. What do you know? And the other party can say, oh, great, I didn't know that. I'll just update my own state. Or they can say, well, I know some things you don't, and here's what you don't know. And the dance of exchanging these sync state messages is what causes both parties to get a coherent view of their DID docs again. I think that's enough at the high level. Maybe there is also a leave message if you want to leave a relationship. This is a, you know, it's not you, it's, or it's me, I'm done, or we're getting divorced kind of a message that you send when you want to terminate a relationship. You don't have to send one, because in a self-sovereign world, anybody can end a relationship just by not participating anymore. But it's best practice to send one so the other party cleans up. And there's discussion here about how to authorize keys in a DID document and privacy considerations and so forth. So I think that this method spec is, it's not by any means final, but it is complete in the sense that it covers most of the interesting areas. So it's now ready for people to weigh in and say, let's change this idea, or let's improve that, or here's a better example, or let's go a different direction. And I would love to get collaboration.
I've got a few questions. Do you want me to engage here or just in the issues of the...
Well, let's ask Sam how much time he wanted to spend on this topic.
I think this is worthwhile. Let's get it started now. And if we find rabbit holes we're falling into, we can push them into other venues.
Okay. The first one I had was about the key identifier or key type where you did numbering. Can you explain a little bit more your thinking on this? I haven't gotten a chance to read it, but what I was wondering is, can you support multiple key formats in the same DID? And also, does this lock it down to specific keys in any way if you do that?
So one DID can't have more than one key in its that's used. It cannot have more than one key type that's used to generate the actual NSI. The NSI is this part of the string right here, the ID string portion in the ABNF. There can only be one key type at a time that is giving the DID its globally unique value. But the DID document that's associated with the DID could have other key types in it.
Okay. And I noticed in an example below that you dropped it. Can you drop it later on? I'm not sure which example it was, but it was in your, I believe your Delta, it had Delta time in it. The ID did not have a key format in there. And so I was curious.
Oh, that's probably just an example. Or I mean, an example of me being dumb. Probably I just forgot.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you could drop it like after you rotated the keys. So like say I generated with an ED25519 key and then I rotated the key to SECP256K1, and that's the only key I have, then could you drop it?
So I think that DIDs have to be immutable. So you can't change the DID NSI value after you've created it, but it's possible for a DID to use a key other than the key with which it was created. I'm realizing that I need to write a section about rotation. I would think that what you described is possible. So you create it with an ED25519 key, and then you say, you know what, the only keys I'm currently using with this DID are SECP256 keys. So the DID identifier would still be did colon peer colon one colon whatever the ED25519 initial value was. But the did doc would clarify that you're only using SECP256 keys.
Okay. Cool. Thank you for that. The second question I had, I'll hold off in case somebody else has one. I don't want to take up all the time.
Daniel, I had a quick question. First off, awesome work. I reckon this is such a great spec to have formalized. My questions were around how we draw distinction between what's in scope of the actual peer method spec versus what's did comms and how we create that relationship between messaging protocols. Because I guess for me, this reads really well, having the background and context of Indy, but I'm just cautious. You're obviously hyper aware of how we use this to promote greater engagement in the community, but have you thought about how we could potentially take some of the elements in this peer spec and make it even more intuitive? Because some of the stuff mentioned in here, the protocol section, for example, was sort of reliant on a bit of prior knowledge of the comms, which we haven't sort of distilled into a spec yet.
I tried really hard to write this document for a person who doesn't know a lot about DIDCOMs. You can see right here, for example, I'm explaining some basics about DIDCOMs without calling it DIDCOMs or DID messaging or whatever we're going to end up calling it. But I'm explaining some of the basic concepts here for a person who's not sharing that context. But I think it's likely that I haven't done that very thoroughly. And so my opinion about an ideal outcome would be you can read this spec and not understand anything about this world of agent communication the way that we've been talking about it. But the spec is basically self-contained. It stands on its own. Although if you get down into, you know, nitty gritty details, it may hyperlink out to other things that you would have to learn. Do you think that's a good goal?
Yeah, no, I 100%. What I think this is actually promoting, which is brilliant, is the need for us to distill some of the information we've got in the Indy Hype repo into a more formalized knowledge base, or push some of them towards new W3 specs, like a DIDCOM spec. So I think this is pushing everything in the right direction, and now we, I guess, yeah, have to have a strategy around how we drive that forward.
I think there's a tight relationship between the peer did method and did comms, because you have to communicate the stuff over did comms in order to make the peer did method work. For the other protocols, I think the answer is yes, we want to do that, but I'm wary that if we plow ahead, then we're going to miss the opportunity to work better with other communities. And so we're already engaging in conversations with other communities about how to identify gaps and bridge them and things. And I think that ongoing work is important. And we'll see that at IAW. There's already calls happening on of that nature, et cetera. So I think that this is nice, because when we start talking about peer dids, then it allows for us to point somewhere and say, this is what we mean, which is really helpful. And that way we can avoid that. The other key point, though, in having this be a DID method is we have to make sure that the protocols work with any DID, even ones that are anchored to a ledger, et cetera. And then ideally, of course, we like the use of peer DIDs, but the protocols need to be independent of the fact that that peer DIDs may or may not be in use. There may be other DID methods being used.
I think I'm feeling very urgently the need to move ahead with whatever project we're going to create to deal with it's what we were calling the Envoy project, the shared wallet project in Hyperledger, the thing that is about agent relationships and agent wallets and so forth, but not so much about a particular blockchain. That project would be so much better as a home for a lot of the knowledge base that Tobias is talking about than Indy would. Until that project is created, I think we keep using Indy Hypes, but as soon as that project exists and we have a little bit of a view into what its future is and how it's positioned relative to the work of DIFF and other groups, I think we will quickly change the way we're talking about this to be broader. And that will help a lot. I do know that last week there were some high level conversations that happened between folks at DIFF and folks from Hyperledger and folks from Sovereign in San Francisco. Drummond was there and talked with Daniel Buckner and some others about this notion. What they're talking about is having an open SSI moonshot, if you want to call it that, which a moonshot is a little bit different than a GitHub repo or a project, and it's bigger or different from an organization. It's not the OpenSSI organization so much as it's the OpenSSI moonshot that many organizations are participating in. And Hyperledger wants to participate, Linux Foundation wants to participate, DIFF wants to participate, Sovereign wants to participate, etc. So I would say give it a few weeks, and hopefully by IIW there will be some kind of a coherent consensus emerging about what's the best way to frame that work, where to put the artifacts that it generates, how to talk about it, how to brand it, how to standardize it, etc.
So that sounds awesome, and I think that's extremely important to the drive at the moment. Is there any formal forum that for those who want to get more involved in that discussion?
I think there might be a Rocket Chat channel or something. Seems like I heard Nathan mention that he was going to create one or something like that, but I don't see it in my list of channels. I'm not in it. So why don't I take an action item to see if I can dredge up some information about that and report back to everybody.
Awesome.
Right now there's sort of parallel conversations happening in communities with several of us across community. And there's not really a good central place. That's part of the problem. And I suspect that at IW, that will be a main focus of conversation, and we'll try and pick some place, either that there's a co-branded project or something else that's happening, and that will make it easier to happen. Also, Daniel, I appreciate your articulation of what you described. That was a much clearer answer than I gave.
Yeah, so anyway, my own feeling about this is that at the level of detail that's in the pure DID spec, I think it's moderately good. But in the hype, which is a lower level of detail, when you get down and dirty with exactly what will happen when certain messages are exchanged, I think not all of the dots connect yet. There's a series of comments from Lovesh about exactly how to resolve a merge conflict in state that's interesting, that needs to be worked through. And there's also some subtleties around authorizations of keys that I think would really benefit from some community thinking. So this is an area where collaboration could really improve the quality of the content a lot. So I hope that people will go look at it. But it is also a little bit of a deep area. It's not something that you can read in 5 minutes. You have to spend an hour thinking hard about it before your head starts getting in the place where you get insights.
Daniel?
Yeah.
How complete do you think the deltas section is? Like, do you have a list of what you think all the deltas are, and or is that needed? Where do you think that? I haven't tried to match everything that I can possibly think of into those things. Have you done that? And are you comfortable with it?
I started doing that. Somewhere in here, there is a section that talks about deltas.
Yeah.
In the hype, there's also, let me just, there is a testcases.md document.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Where I started listing a bunch of different scenarios that I wanted to explore. And I listed five just to start with. But my guess is that if we really had complete coverage, we'd probably have a list of 50 or 100. So this is an area that would be particularly good at teasing out issues. If somebody were to pull up the test cases and say, well, what about this situation? The more of those we get, the better. And I would really like it if we ended up having this be a hype that had 20 collaborators, because 20 people all contributed to the test cases and stuff. That would be great. So, maybe I should hand the mic back to Sam, and we move on to the next topic.
I had one last question. Okay. It's fairly short, but it could rabbit hole, so let's try not to. So with a pure DID method spec, there is the potential to create an issuing DID with the pure DID message spec. Do you foresee that going and being supported by the DID method spec, or a protocol that's built on top of the pure DID method spec?
When you say create an issuing DID, the thing that makes it an issuing DID is that you use it to sign credentials, right?
Correct.
So if you sign credentials with the same peer DID repeatedly in many different contexts, essentially you're creating almost an anywise peer DID. But everybody who gets those credentials will need the ability to validate that your signature is current, and they won't have it just because they know you're DID. So unless you actually form a relationship with everybody who receives the credential, the peer DID will not be very helpful.
Yeah, what I had in mind, so the way I've looked at peer DIDs is it's a context-driven thing, and issuance is not context-driven so much as it is based upon, I guess it is context-driven in some ways. So like what I'm thinking is, if I wanted to issue an intranet single sign-on for my company, where only people inside the company can see it, I can set up a peer-wise protocol with every person in the company and then issue credentials with the DID that exists in that. And nobody outside the company knows that DID exists, but everybody inside the company can validate that credential. And so you're doing issuing of credentials off ledger.
Yeah, I don't have any deep thoughts about that. That's a cool use case that I haven't mentally explored. Maybe that would be a good area for you to write a new section of this method spec and contribute it.
Okay.
I've had thoughts about this, and I like exploring this, but it's also occurred to me that there's nothing that would about that would prevent us from doing this, meaning that would be an additive step or an additional thing that we can do rather than something that we would need to change foundationally about how it's built. So I think that is cool, but it may or may not need to be in the pure method spec. It might just be, you know, the creation of a protocol to do, you know, N-wise credentials or something of that nature.
Gotcha. Okay. That's kind of where I was thinking it would go to. I just wasn't sure kind of what you do with credential definitions and schema definitions. Like, do you refer back to a particular ledger, or do you put it on the micro ledger? Is kind of where I was thinking about the intricacies of it.
So my thoughts of it were the schemas and definitions would be resolvable, would have DIDs, and therefore like a schema that is uses the peer method spec was resolvable, and therefore if you basically performed the peer protocol on the DID to resolve a schema or a credential definition mentioned in a presentation or an issuance and you couldn't resolve it, then it's just like a ledger being offline. It's like you can come to the conclusion, I couldn't reach this for whatever reason. And you might have certain edge cases that apply to peer saying, well, I obviously don't possess it. But that was my thinking on it.
So we're starting to rabbit hole, but I'll channel my inner Nathan for a second because he's on vacation. We have to be careful that we don't try to make everything a DID. There is value to things like either content addressable storage as it refers to schemas or things like that, and that we can solve the problem. The short answer is that I do believe there's good ways to solve that problem, but I'm also less interested in rabbit holing on that when we're still trying to get the other, you know, more common public case out of the way.
Yep. I'm with you on that as well. I don't think that it's worth exploring this until we feel like this pure DID method spec is a little more mature. I just kind of wanted to see that idea in people's minds.
There's definitely a future there.
Before I close off this topic, I just want to point out one other interesting thing. It occurred to me that the message family name that Sam and crew had defined for connections would be a perfect message family to house these other messages that are about synchronizing your connections, not just establishing your connections. So in this spec as it currently stands, there's a little bit of an inconsistency. I appropriated Sam's message family identifier and said that I'm adding some additional message types to it. But if we do that, then that means that the message family is bigger than the protocol. In other words, the message family contains many different protocols. One is the establishment protocol. One is the synchronization protocol. One is the query protocol to find out what the state is. And maybe one is the leave the relationship protocol. So I'm still kind of scratching my head about whether that's a good idea or if everyone should have a separate identifier.
I like it. I think your appropriation is appropriate. That was unintendedly punny. But there's certainly an excess that we could take this to that would be bad. But I think that the idea of having the connection maintenance and notification of termination be part of the same sort of core protocol is really valuable. Now, one of the things here is that the connection, establishing a connection, doesn't have to use a pure DID method.
Right.
So we may run into issues where someone wants to use the connection protocol and the other pieces of the protocol without pure DID maintenance, and we'll have to figure out how that plays. But in the meantime, I think it's the right place.
Not only might somebody not want to use it, but you could have different answers for different parties. You could have Alice say, hey, I want to write my DID to Bitcoin, and Bob say, great, I want a pure DID for mine. So the connection management gets even more complicated.
I'm actually largely in favor of this, particularly because I see this as a natural convergence pressure. If I want to download the connection message family, I pick up the introduction protocol and I pick up a way to resolve DIDs from multiple different resolvers. And then I also pick up, you know, the peer DID method protocol. And so I see by bundling these together, you can kind of purposefully inject things to force convergence and force support. It's a little bit of a strategy play, but that's kind of how I'm thinking about it.
I like that. I just don't want to scare people away from this entirely because they're like, oh, I don't want to use that introduction protocol because I don't want to do peer DIDs or something, right?
Okay. I can see that.
But it's not a bad plan. I mean, we'll have to see how this happens going forward. I think we should kind of continue in this vein. And if we need to divide this up in appropriate pieces later, I think that's still possible to do by new message families with major version revs. So I think that we should keep going the direction we're going.
Okay, Sam.
Awesome. Daniel, thank you for that. And please, contributors, read, comment, submit PRs. I know Daniel would really like the PRs. And that's an awesome topic. And I suspect that the peer did method will be a hot topic at IAW. So that's awesome. Next on the agenda is Kyle talking about signatures. Kyle, are you ready for that?
Yes, I am.
Share away.
Can you guys see that? Oh, that's wrong.
We can. Oh, well, we see
conversation.
Something.
You'll see it soon.
Slides.
Okay. So I was basically to frame this conversation. It seemed like with the signature decorator hype, we were looking at moving to JWSs or JWTs to become compliant with kind of an easy pickup is kind of what I was seeing. And this was brought up by Stephen Curran, and I largely agree with him. And so I kind of wanted to frame the conversation, keep it very short, show you guys kind of the two different formats, and then ultimately cover the key points between them, and then hopefully get to an outcome where we decide if we want JWS or JWT. We may end up discussing, well, we don't want either. I think that's still a viable option. I'm trying not to inject my opinion too much. I'm just trying to lay out the facts and allow us to decide. So with that said, here's what a JWT format is. I also provided a link to the spec so that if we're having conversations, I can try and do a quick lookup to see if there's something relevant. I've only done somewhat of a quick skim, but I have found kind of the main points that are relative to this discussion. There's also another, I was going to show the JSON format, and it actually pastes like super long. So I'll show you what this looks like here real quick. And I made sure to include that there so that when people are going back and look at the slides later, they'll be able to find it easier. 6.4. Oh, this one links. Maybe not. Am I looking at the JWT spec? Yes, I am. That's why. I have mixed these up. So I'll have to change that. This one's 515. And then jumping down here to A64. This is the traditional format of a, well, this is an example format, not a traditional format. And that's a key point I'll highlight in a second, of JWS format. One of the main things to consider here is this is actually JSON serialized rather than compact serialized, which is how they refer to it. This would be something considered compact formalized, which is period delineated. So to that point, the key points that I've seen as the difference in it is JWTs are based on JWSs. It's kind of like a profile of a JWS is how I've heard it referred to. One of the key points of it being profiled is that it is Base64 UR encoded by default. This is referred to as compact serialization in the Jose format. And then there's also some additional registered claims as they use that. That's becoming a very overloaded term. I don't understand why they chose that word, but I think they did it before they knew any of this was going on. It was written in 2015. So we'll just kind of have to work with that language. But some of those attributes are issuer, subject, audience, expiration time, not before, issued at, and JTI. And I believe a lot of these are used in OpenID Connect and OAuth implementations, which is going to become relevant when we're trying to engage with those communities and support kind of those protocols, as I've heard has come up in the past with us and with others. And then the last point I wanted to make was JWTs are the form that I've most seen used. I've seen it used in UPort documents, and I believe they're working on top of OpenID Connect. And then I've also seen diff documents. With specifics to OpenID Connect, I think it can support both JWSs and JWTs, but I'm not absolutely certain. So I don't want to say one or the other is better. And so with that, that's kind of where I sit. Does anybody have any questions or opinions based on this?
I have a question.
Okay.
Are they using JWTs over UPort and diff to pass credentials, or are they using them to sign things generally?
I think they're using it to sign generally, particularly because on the Jose here, the did auth Jose and diff, which is where I've seen this. Let's search for JWT, and then we've got docs authentication. They're using the signature as a method of authentication. So I think there's an easier, it's not in this one. So this is actually gets turned into a protocol that's a picture that you can see. But what's useful to notice here is that they're essentially using JWTs that are wrapped with a JWE. And it looks like their language is also not very specific. So this is kind of where it's, yeah, go ahead.
So this this section of here appears to be describing what's paralleled with the wire level protocol that we have.
Exactly. Yep.
The difference is that our wire level provides repudiation and theirs is non-repudiable.
Correct.
And so, okay. So I don't have any conclusion off of that. I just wanted to clarify what particularly they're using it for, because if they're using it for something that's different than what we're proposing, we use it for, then it's worth highlighting that.
Yep.
This is where that conversation that I tried to bring up around the multiple wire level formats sort of stemmed from a few weeks ago, is the fact that I see the ability that we have encrypted messages and unencrypted messages, and when encrypted messages are, you know, when you know you have a key for the recipient you're sending to and you encrypt it, you have one other decision to make is, do I include a non-repudiable signature or do I make it repudiable, like what we do? And that's where I think we can arrive at sort of consensus with communities like DIFF and what Microsoft's doing here with this did auth Yoast, is that if we can agree that when you do non-repudiation, you use a nested JWT structure inside the JWE, then we've aligned essentially, as long as they're willing to accept that non-repudiation isn't the only path, and that repudiable, i.e. you unpack a JWE message and you don't find a JWT, you just find the application level message, is also valid. So that's where, yeah, I see.
And having a standard format is good there, but I think it's worth as a community knowing sort of what the trade-offs are. For example, the JWT is an opinionated form of JWS, right? For example, you can't do a JWT in the expanded form of a JWS, and so there's some of the questions about whether that's valuable or not, or there's some other restrictions there that we have to consider. But you're right. If we get them to buy into this, although there's different levels that we're talking about. They're doing a JWT inside of a JWE. And we're more or less just kind of doing the JW only we're doing with authenticated encryption.
Yes.
And we have to decide at which level this applies. We have talked about the ability to sign an entire message. We've also talked about just the ability to sign a section of the message. And that's valuable, I think. And I think something they haven't quite considered yet. So as we bring this up, that's part of the conversation we'll need to have.
Yeah, I agree. I think when we're signing, I think we've got it right in the digital signatures height around when we're signing specific fields or portions of a message. I think that's incredibly valuable. But when we're signing the message itself, it feels like an artifact of the wire level message rather than the digital signatures height. To me, feels more like an application level construct because it's a decorator that's sort of applying some unit of transform to a subset of the application level message, as opposed to something that's almost pre-baked into the packing of the message, which is whether or not you sign it or you unsign it. And so I feel like if we can align with them on that, then whether or not they use field by field digital signatures doesn't really matter. That's a completely different argument or case to make. But you know, I guess we note here that JWS and JWT are used very interchangeably, so seeking some clarification about that might be worthwhile as well.
Can somebody teach me, is there any difference between a JWT and a JWS besides the compact serialization?
There's
kind of. Let me show you real quick.
One of them is multiple signatures. A JWS can handle multiple things, and a compact form can't. It can only handle one.
Yeah.
And doesn't a JWT sort of predefine some of the attributes that must feature as well, like common ones like subject and issued at? And
those are optional. I was just looking into that. I think they both link to it, so it doesn't really matter. If you jump down here into this section, the way it reads is the following claims are registered in the IANA JSON web token claims. But then when you take a look at all of these, they all list as optional. And that's usually listed down here at the, it's like the last word, it seems like. So they're all considered optional, but they're registered specifically as public claim names is how they refer to it. It's similar to how we put sender in our JWE. That's a private one because we didn't register it with IANA. But it is acceptable to use. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I think there's three things. There's opinions about the specific claim names that they're using here. Yep. I mean, we just and we can use those. We just have to be consistent in our use across the community. The correct. Second thing is that it's only valid in the compact serialization.
Yep.
And the side effect of the compact serialization is that you can only end up with what's it called? It's like one signature or one
So you wouldn't be able to be signed by multiple parties. Is that what you're trying to say, Sam?
I think it doesn't do multiple SIGs, and I'm going to have to dig into this slightly. But the JSON serialization allows it, but the compact form does not.
That is correct. Because the compact form defines which sections, if I jump over here, which sections cover each portion that's period delineated. So this red has to be the header section. This purple has to be the payload section. And this blue has to be the verify signature section. And that is defined by the JWS compact serialization format, I believe. Because that's how they do it in the example.
Just the other thing that I think we should be featuring in this hype as well is obviously we have JWE-based messages, as I was saying, sort of several weeks ago, which is when I know the recipient and I'm encrypting a message to them. But what about the inverse when I don't know who I'm sending it to? So it needs to be in plain text because I can't encrypt it to them. Usually at the start of an interaction, say connections or the ephemeral challenge, but I want to give the whoever's receiving it some form of way to verify its integrity and it hasn't been tampered with, i.e. it's been signed. So I'd just like to throw into the mix and reiterate that whatever we decide on here in JWS and JWT, I'd like to factor that into the alternative unencrypted wire level format as well, which is when you have an invite that's signed or an ephemeral challenge that's signed in plain text. So we need that decision.
We can consider that. I think as a community, we have yet to identify a place where that actually adds value. Like, for example, in an invitation, all I have to do is then wipe out the entire invitation, sign it myself, and give it to you, and you can't tell. So it can detect tampering, but not replacement.
It depends what it's signed with. Because if it's signed with a public bid that's registered on a ledger that you predefined know about, then you can't. You can't tamper with it because if you looked up the bid mentioned in the signature and you cross-referenced it from the ledger and the key that's been replaced to sign its integrity is no longer valid, then
you can. But if you're using a public deed, you're not passing anything else in the invitation anyway. So there's literally nothing to sign.
But you could be passing something like a challenge or a message that or something that you want to use to signify the beginning of an interaction. Say the ephemeral challenge protocol, a public organization. Wants to issue a challenge out in a web browser and wants the party receiving it to be able to validate it through public integrity, basically, to make sure that that is the person requesting the challenge and where to send the information back to. If it's signed by a public bid, then it's validated.
Sure, but there's literally no attack vector that I understand yet that can be, even if it was manipulated and I send the thing that I'm going to send back to what's on the ledger associated with the DID, there's literally no chance of anyone impersonating them in that, or me in that case. So, I mean, we can continue talking about that, but I think we need to make clear the actual use cases where that's needed and the values that it provides before we expend effort on it.
I think there's plenty of valuable use cases, because here's what I've realized when looking at the ephemeral protocol, which is where this becomes relevant. And it's also relevant to the man-in-the-middle attack, which is certificate authorities were originally developed to solve this problem. And your ledger essentially becomes a decentralized certificate authority in many cases. And that's where Tobias is saying you have the option to essentially use that key so that I can validate this key hasn't been manipulated in any way. And then I can use that certificate authority and the trust of the ledger in order to validate this key and know that it hasn't been manipulated with and it hasn't been replaced.
If you're using a public DID, you just have the key on the ledger and the problem goes away.
I don't want
to rabbit hole on this, but okay. The point is that I think that I'm not opposed. I think that that's generally a good idea, except that I think we have yet to come up with good use cases where we say, yes, that would be a value and here's where we'd use it.
Okay. I can leave it at that. And then we can think about this more, because I think this has also taken us more down the ephemeral challenge protocol, which can still be worked on. But we do need to decide on a format, or at least the first format. So something I realized when Tobias was talking was that we can pick one first, and then we can adapt and select a second later and add more complexity later. But I would prefer to pick one first and then kind of build on that. And this is where I am somewhat injecting kind of my opinion on this, and I would love to be countered, which is I'm not a fan of the JWT, specifically because it requires an implementations to be parsed and to not understand it. And that's not beneficial in some languages like Python and JSON, where I can just do automatic serialization of JSON. But if I'm base64 URL encoding and then period delineating, then I do have to do it. I have to do that parsing first.
Well, we have the parsing even with our current signature thing, though, right? Because we're base64 encoding the content that you're signing, and that works the same way in a JWS. The actual content that you're trying to sign is base64 encoded before you start. So that's just the problem with signatures without canonical JSON serialization. But you do make the point that there's one additional unpack step, meaning if you're going to have a compact form, you have to expand it into something useful before you take that extra step. So the JWS seems to have a little bit less of an overhead of the JWT just because there's not an extra step of making it smaller.
It's important to consider that actually both are doing this. So the base64 URL encoding of the payload is still happening. So
yes, and in our current signature hype as well.
Correct.
So we all have that problem.
Yep.
That's basically just a clean but sort of crude way to get around inconsistent serialization of JSON.
And throw on an extra 33% while you're at it.
There doesn't appear I was thinking about things that our current signature hype has, and one of them, for example, is a timestamp, but you can do that using one of their standard claims. It seems like the only thing that we have to standardize is which claim we actually contained the thing we were signing, right? Meaning, if I'm signing a field, there has to be one of the claims that holds the field value before base64 encodes in order to make that work, right? Kyle?
Can you repeat the question? I was getting lost at the last part.
Well, so JWTs have an opinion about what these claim names should be.
Correct.
And none of them specifies where you should put an additional payload.
What do you mean by additional payload?
If you're signing a field, where do the contents of the field go that you're signing?
In payload. So in here, going back to this example here, this part right here, that second in between the two periods, is your payload section.
But the payload also contains those other things, right? Like the IAT and the other claim names?
No, I believe those fall in the header format. Let's go check here real quick.
Then it wouldn't be protected.
Yeah, and this is something that we're going to have to bring up at IIW. I think that's going to be the perfect form for
I think the payload is a structure that includes those claim names that they're describing. So it includes IAT and the other types of things, which means that we would need to pick a claim name inside of that structure that contained the field payload or the message payload that we're actually trying to sign. See, here's the claim set that you have on the screen, ISS EXP, and then the HTTP is root true. The is root true appears to be a custom attribute that they're using, which is fine. Yep. But if we're going to embed content inside there, having a standardized name of the claim for the content we're embedding seems to make sense.
Let's see if we can jump down and see a decoded example. What I'm specifically looking for is, are they putting it in the header format or if they're putting in the payload? Although I don't believe JWTs have any sort of integrity protection in the first place, which is why they've decided to use JWE wrapping. Because JWE wrapping does provide that to you, but the...
Well, they're different purposes. JWTs are to sign things and JWEs are to encrypt things.
Actually, let me take that back for a second. You do get the integrity protection from the signature.
Right. For everything that's in the payload, which means all those attributes have to be in the payload as well. So it sounds like we could do this without too much grief. The question is do we settle on the compact form or the JWT form, the compact form or the JSON form of the token? The other thing that I'll mention is that both in the chat and in the notes, I dropped a link called JWS and JWE for Not So Dummies. That's the best post I've found that explains how things go together and how it works in the different forms. So if you're curious about this stuff, then that's probably the link for you.
Another thing worth considering, so I'm looking at the JWT website here. One thing to note first is recently a guy at Auth0 had noticed some of the implementations have vulnerabilities in them, where they're not checking validation. And so you have to be careful with them. Sorry, this one, wrong thing. But there are implementations of these libraries already out there, which is the biggest advantage in terms of implementation. You can just take the JWT format and pass it out, and it can do verification for you, but you can't use that data sometimes. I haven't looked too much into it, but this is something to consider.
So what's the action item on this? What do we, now that we have some more information about that, what this would look like, do we just wholesale switch over because we think it'll be closer? Do we wait for community discussion? What's the next thing we do on this?
My preference would be for us to determine our preference first, and then we go engage the community after we've kind of played around with it, similar to how we've done things in the past. Essentially, can we decide on JWS or JWT? And then once we decide on that, can we go to the other communities after we've implemented some stuff with it and say, here's why we decided what we did?
Is there anyone here on the call that's opposed to changing our signature format from what Kyle originally proposed to something that is JWS based?
I'm not opposed, but I do want to ask, I don't like the notion that we're wrapping stuff. Signing something shouldn't require you to have the content inside the wrapper at all. I should be able to just sign a hash of something.
Yes. Can you produce an uncontroversial, consistent JSON serialization method?
The relationship management protocol includes a link to an RFC for, actually it's a proposed RFC, it's not accepted, but a very simple JSON normalization algorithm. I went poking at the one for JSON-LD and discovered to my surprise that there isn't one for JSON-LD. Rather, JSON-LD says, you have to use an algorithm and here's an example of one, and their hyperlink in the spec doesn't work. So I don't know what algorithm we should pick, but the one that I found that was the RFC one.
Do you have a link?
I can look it up. It's in the relationship management protocol. There's a link to it. I'll go find it and paste it. in a minute.
I tend to agree with where Sam's going with this. So like if we have to dive in and muck with serialization technologies and to get uniform sort of behavior cross language, I don't feel like that is the best use of our time. And in the interim, I guess one of the better approaches would be to...
Well, to clarify my position, I think if there's one that works and works well and is relatively uncontroversial, we should absolutely do it. It's way better. But so in the absence of one, I think that inventing one to solve our own problem may not be the best application of our energy.
We would have to pre-process. We'd have to pre-process the native object structure into some form, so that or muck with the JSON serializer in each language to make sure that it serializes the JSON in a deterministic fashion. Is that correct?
Sam, look in the merges and merge conflicts section. Okay, there's something about now. Look for a hyperlink in here somewhere.
The only one I see is this SSI notation.
No, that's not it.
That
notation. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, we're running down the canonicalization, which I hear people get very opinionated over.
Well, and there's like lots of skeletons on that hill. So, my opinion is that if we find one that is uncontroversial and works, then we should do it. If not, then the easiest way to just cheat is to Base64 encode it, and then the problem goes away at the expense of making it bigger and, you know, not being able to read it without unpacking it.
Yep. Okay, but so doing the Base64 thing sounds fine too. But here's the thing. What I'm trying to get at is I'm trying to avoid putting the content of what you're signing, whether it's Base64 encoded or canonicalized or whatever. I don't want to put the content inside the signature blob. I want the signature blob to just contain a hash of the content and then have the content outside, so I don't have to retransform it.
So I think what you're saying is, let me understand it and point to examples here so that I make sure I'm saying this right. Am I looking at the right one? No, of course I'm not. You're essentially saying that this payload section, you want to be a hash, and then you want the content of that hash to be addressable outside of this JSON blob here.
Yes.
And this signature is over that payload.
Yes.
I don't see a problem.
In other words, if I want to sign something that's, let's say I want to sign a 40 gigabyte blob of data, I want the payload to be small and the 40 gigabytes to be Base64 encoded or something, not re-encoded according to JWS specs.
Okay. So the way that I would approach this is, so I'm trying to find the link. Disappear, please. Where's that one that we are looking at, the GitHub? Essentially what I'm thinking is you do inside of your format the hash section, and then you do a second thing, which is content or something, inside of the relationship management, and then you do the what would it be, the content hash and then decorator signature. Inside that decorator signature, you do the JWT or the JWS format, and then you have a separate content blob. Would that be acceptable, or do you see it encountering problems that way?
It sounds pretty good, but I'd like to see an example before I'm confident.
Okay.
Here's another use case.
I like the principle of what you're talking about, but unless the non-canonicalized thing is not represented in Base64, then I think the benefits are really minimal.
So what if I want to sign something that's not JSON? Can I sign an attachment?
You could sign a hash of an attachment.
What I'm feeling like is that I'm trying to combine what Tobias said about having signing be a wire level thing. I don't want signing to be a wire level thing in the sense that I take everything else that I already produced and then retransform it in order to do the signature. I want to take everything I already produced for some other reason and simply produce a hash of it and then sign the hash and attach that or include it with my message. I don't want to rewrap. Does that make sense? In the attachment hype, there's this notion that you can have content that isn't even present in the message, but you can say, here's the SHA-256 hash of the content. And in the same way, I want to be able to say, here's the hash of the thing I'm signing, but not the thing itself. I want to be able to send a message where I don't even include the content I'm signing. I just include the signature over the hash of the content.
How are you specifying where that content might be located? So you want a hash of it. You don't want it inside the payload of the signature. You want it someplace else. Is it going to be in a canonical place? It's always as an attachment, or you're going to have a URL that points to it, or how do you refer to the data?
So the way I've thought about doing this is, so say the attachment is just a hash of it, and I'm trying to find the format here.
A little bit farther down, right? Okay. Little bit farther, right there.
Okay.
Wait a second. Keep right after the JSON section. We just added this today. Here's the links section. There you go.
Perfect. Yep. So the nice thing about this is, you can actually copy the content to a server which you control, which prevents the correlation. And that was the main concern I had with this. So you can sign the hash and know the content is the same, but you can repurpose it inside this attachment using this links to a server which you own and prove that it's the same content and then take that signature. This is really valuable when you're trying to do verifiable credentials that contain images.
You can also do it without a server you control if you don't care about the correlation. There's a handful of cases where that's obvious.
Yep.
I mean, if I'm sending you a message telling you which Linux distribution I want you to use, and I just link to it and tell you what the hash is, then that's not a problem.
Exactly. Yep. It creates many different options when you take this approach.
Okay. Well, I think the next step would be to vote for one of our two variations. Sam asked the question, is anybody opposed? I said, I'm not opposed, but I raised this rat hole question. Maybe we just produce some kind of a doc, whether it's a draft hype or a Google Doc or a wiki page or whatever, where we say, here's what it would look like and here's the pros and cons. Maybe it's just Kyle's slideshow with more information in it.
I'd love to see it in hype form just so that we have the examples and we have it more laid out.
Yep.
If you're willing to do the work, Kyle, I think that having this written out in hype form would be helpful.
I can do that. Are you guys all right if I kind of introduce the idea of JV? I'm going to inject my opinion here when I'm writing this, and I want to make sure this is kosher with you guys, which is JWS is the preferred format, but if you want to use JWTs, here's how we do it. Or would you rather see I flip it, or would you rather I just pick one?
I would rather you picked JWS, but think about how you design the structure so that you know how you would do JWT if that's demanded of us. Okay. I think having one format's better than two, but if someone comes along and has a really compelling reason why they need to use JWT for this, then I think we could, if that makes sense.
Yep.
But until someone comes along and says, hey, I really want JWT, we think it's a suboptimal form of it. So until someone comes along with a compelling reason, I think that we should stick with JWS. That's my opinion on it.
Yep. Now, we are probably going to run into the same problems we had with JWTs in the past, which is algorithms. I think they support ED25509, and I believe that's EDDSA. I believe both of those are supported, but I'll do some double checking on that and include all this stuff in the hype.
So perfect. I also feel like it's okay to be opinionated here and say we support JWSs in the JSON form and only with these keys. And again, we can relax that upon demand.
Okay.
So if we're following the same form, then relaxing it, there's a paved path to relax it. But in the meantime, we don't all have to, support 17 different methods.
Is everybody all right if I just close the PR I have down right now and then reopen a new one with this format? And then I can just like add a comment in there and say, go look at this new one. We decided, I'll just take the summary of this comments, which is we wanted to move to a Jose-based format.
I'd sort of prefer you left the existing one alone. That way we had two PRs we could compare. Is that bad?
I don't think so.
I don't really have a super strong opinion, but I think there might be several other hypes that hyperlink to your signature hype. So just keep that in mind.
Okay. Yeah, the main reason I was thinking about this is I don't want to inject my original opinions into when I'm writing the new one, which is why I wanted to just basically throw out the old one and write a new one.
Well, just ignore the old one and write a new one. And that way we can compare back and forth and make sure that if there's any favorite things we had in the old one, they're still in the new one or whatever.
Yep.
And I think that would help evaluate.
Okay. And then once we decide, we can go and re-edit the hyperlinks. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and if we as a community decide that we're going after the new one, we could just shoot the old one in the head and fix the hyperlinks.
Okay. That sound good, Daniel?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that is settled then. Thank you guys for your opinions and the discussion on this.
Really awesome. Kyle, thank you for putting this together and guiding the discussion. Let me see if I can manage to share my screen since that seems to be the hardest thing about the call today. We've only got like 4 minutes left. I'm inclined to not dive into the introduction protocol, except that you should go read it. That's a hype. I've been going through hypes. I have three more that I think are ready to take from FCP and approve. I just haven't got there yet. And everything else there. Next week, Daniel Bloom has a hype in talking about testing. This is the stuff we talked about, the Connectathon, with the ability to sort of bootstrap a wallet into a known state. This would allow for testing things without going through the connection protocol, which would be simpler. And there's kind of some related conversations about how you introduce what I'm going to call a tool to an agent. In this case, the tool is the test suite, but the same kind of concept applies to any other tool that you would want to use to interact with an agent. And so I have that on the list for next week, but that's unlikely to take the entire time. Are there other topics that we feel like we should be, is it time again to revisit the credential issuance protocol, the credential exchange protocol?
I was going to suggest the ephemeral challenge protocol, given we kind of rabbit-holed into that for a little bit.
Tobias, we talked about the two sides of that, proof of ownership versus proof of credential.
Yeah, so I've updated that height. So if people want to go and have a look, I haven't removed arbitrary proof of credentials aspect to your ephemeral challenge, because I'm still not entirely convinced about the particular thing we were chatting about. What I've done is I've done what I originally intended with the ephemeral challenge protocol, which is it's an arbitrary challenge protocol for challenging a user in several different fashions. Depending on where the community lands on it this week, if we think it's a good thing to chat about, then we should chat about it. But anyone who's interested, go and have a read of what I've updated. It's still a draft, so it's not... it's not near its completion. It's more about trying to promote discussion on the topic in general.
Okay. The other thing, Stephen, would you be willing to give us an update on the changes to the credential exchange protocol?
Sure. Just real quick. The only thing we've really done was we've decided we don't need the proposals for what we're doing. So for the 0.1 credentials exchange protocol, we're not doing that. So right. That's for anyone who's worried about it for IAW. I think we're getting close to being there on the other. I'm forgetting, cause I'm so focused on IAW right now. I'm not remembering. I know an update was done this week on, on the credential exchange hype itself. So we can look at that for next week. Sure.
Let's take a look at that. And mostly that's, I don't think we'll have a super long discussion there, but it's a,
no, you know, I don't think so.
You know, where it is and what needs to happen there. Okay. So that's on the list for next week. Then.
Sure.
We'll start with the testing.
Sure, I'll be ready.
Start with the testing the wallet in it by Daniel Bloom. And then we'll go to the Ephemeral Challenge Protocol, reserve a couple minutes at the end to just get an update on where the credentials exchange protocol is. And that's what we'll talk about next week.
Yep. Sorry about that. And, yep.
Perfect. Okay, any parting comments before we end the call today? Okay, sounds good. This needs to be a next topics. Thank you, folks. I will post the recording. And have yourself a great week.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
Thanks, guys.